ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ ॐ मे ब्रह्मन् प्रोटेक्ट् अस् बोत् मे ब्रह्मन् bestow upon us both the fruit of knowledge. May we both obtain the energy to acquire knowledge. May what we both study reveal the truth. May we cherish no ill feeling toward each other. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. So we are discussing about spiritual values. In my last class, I had mentioned certain stories. Brother Lawrence, Shankaracharya walking in Varanasi and from Sri Ramakrishna's life. What is the point we are discussing? What is it that we learn through these? These are the types of incidents that are happening every day, millions of times, all over the world. But nothing is happening in our lives. But something extraordinary took place in the incidents that I mentioned. Instantaneously, there was a transformation of their lives. What was the transformation? The first thing that happened was they became acutely aware of something which they were missing, perhaps which they never even thought about it. Suddenly, they became very aware of it. And that awareness also brought immediately the goal that they should immediately reach. As soon as they became aware of the goal, suddenly life became a very precious commodity. And what is life? Life means time plus opportunity. So as soon as we become aware of something very precious, immediately values come in. Because as soon as we become aware of a goal, that's not reaching the goal. That's only becoming aware. How beautifully a primer of Vedanta called Vedanta Sara. It's the title of a Sanskrit book which introduces the core concepts of Vedanta to students of Vedanta. It defines it in a most beautiful way. Deepta Shiraha Jalarashi Miva. Suppose someone's head had caught fire, and what would be his first acute need? How to get rid of this burning? So what will he do? First thing that he will seek is, what is the remedy for it? And that remedy is water. Imagine there is water at a short distance and he is running towards it. It's nice to imagine this thing. He's running towards it. Supposing his most beloved friend comes and meets him on the way and says, "Oh, you're running. Come on, come on. What is the hurry? Let's have a chit-chat." Do you think that person will stop? Suppose Sri Ramakrishna comes and says, "Look here, I have something to complain against you." Do you think he will stop? The devotee will say, "I will complain about you later on. I have no time." See, as soon as that awareness came, that I have to be saved, and there is something which can save me, and in between, no obstacle can be tolerated. That is what values really are. We are discussing about values. When does a value become valuable to us? When we are talking about values, usually we talk about, you know, I'm in the context of spiritual life, truthfulness, regularity, devotion, etc., which I will come later on. The first thing that comes, we are not very, we don't feel urgency of it. Okay, supposing Sri Ramakrishna's food is to be offered at 12 o'clock and you are chit-chatting with somebody and it is 12:10. Somebody says, "Are you not going to offer food?" "Yeah, it's all right. The old man has all the time in the world." But do we have the time? Who knows?
So what we think is, we have enough time. After all, I am only 65. At least maximum 35 years I have. Minimum 25 years I have. This is how we calculate. Now look at Sri Ramakrishna's life. He was a very observant person. That is one of the first values we have to develop. Awareness. That is why Swami Vivekananda's clarion call, you know, arise, awake, and stop not till the goal is reached. So first we have to arise, then we become awake. We are not awake. Tulsidas song, you know. So how long have we been sleeping? Life after life, how many lives? 94 crores of lives. We are alive. We are not awake. That's why Swami says, arise and awake. The whole core of Zen philosophy, you know, Zen Buddhism, can be summarized in one word. You know what is it? Awareness. Are you breathing? Be aware. What are you thinking? Be aware. How are you sitting? Be aware. How are you reacting? Be aware. Not to be aware is called Maya. In Vedanta, Sanskrit language, you know what is the name of God? Chaitanya. Chit. Sat. Chit. Nananda. Chaitanya. Chaitanya means what? Complete awareness, consciousness, full consciousness. And what is the opposite of God? Maya. Worldliness. What is worldliness? To be unconscious. And we are not talking psychological unconsciousness. Even that also works. Freudian sleep works in waking state only, not in dream sleep. Freudian sleep, you know, we see something. You see somebody and you call out by some other name. That means what you are telling is, I would have been happy to see the other person, not you. This is called Freudian sleep. Zen Buddhism says, so long as you are unaware of what you are doing, that is called Maya. Example, all the devotees know the example in the Sri Ramakrishna's life. Totapuri was one day talking. What was he talking? All that you see is Brahman. All that you see, you hear, you taste, you touch, you smell is nothing but Brahman. But if you use the word Brahman, my point would not be very clear. Brahman means what? Consciousness. All, everything is consciousness. He was going on, he was in a sermonizing mood. He was giving big sermon to Sri Ramakrishna. You know what happened? A temple servant came to take a little bit of fire for lighting his cigarette. But Totapuri did not see. But he saw him after he took. Immediately what was his reaction? He took his big sticks, you know, tongs, about to beat that fellow. Sri Ramakrishna fell on the ground, started laughing, rolling on the ground and laughing. Totapuri couldn't understand. Why are you laughing? Tor Brahmagyan daud kototuku dekchi. I'm seeing the extent of your consciousness. Just now you are talking about consciousness. And you have become, you are completely unconscious. What is that unconsciousness? First of all, he did not notice. Later on only he noticed. Secondly, when he noticed, what did he notice? What was he talking about? Brahman. How was he looking at the servant? As completely opposite to Brahman. Totapuri, you know, he made that mistake. He slipped for 1 second or 2 seconds or whatever it is. He slipped. And that slipping is called Maya. What is your Maya? What is the difference between us and Totapuri at that moment? You see, we also get angry. He also got angry. See the point? 1 second's slip. This is what Shankara says in his Viveka Chudamani, most beautiful book. A most sincere spiritual aspirant trying to swim the ocean of this transmigration for one moment. If he becomes unconscious of what is happening, Mahamaya is waiting for that moment to catch him by his throat and forcibly drown him in the ocean of 1 second is enough. Life and death, 1 second. I was just reading something very, very wonderful. Mahapurush Maharaj's reminiscences. There was a man who was his devotee. He was a very rich man. He was married. And he had a very nice wife. And he, this man, loved his wife. And one day, it so happened that they invited some guests, and she was cooking. As she was cooking, her sari caught fire, and within a few minutes, nobody could save her. She simply died. This man went mad. I think his name was Bipin. He went mad. So they had to lock him up. After a few days, when he became a little bit quiet, then he was brought to Mahapurush Maharaj. He was initiated by Mahapurush Maharaj. He was very devoted to Mahapurush Maharaj. Seeing Mahapurush Maharaj, Swami Shivananda, a direct disciple of Sri Ramakrishna, this man, slightly better, fell at his feet and started sobbing. Mahapurush Maharaj did not know about what happened. He asked, "Why are you sobbing? What happened, my child?" And this man said, "My wife died like this, Maharaj. Now, I don't know who is taking care of her. I am deeply grieved. Who is taking care of her?" Immediately, Mahapurush Maharaj told, "My child, don't worry. She is a devotee of God. She is lying in the lap of Sri Ramakrishna. You don't need to worry." The man was a little bit consoled, and he went away. Swami Nikhilananda is narrating this incident. What happened? Few days after that, Swami Nikhilananda went to Mayavati, another far distant place. After a few days, this devotee who went mad, who was consoled by Mahapurush Maharaj, came to Mayavati, completely normal, joyous. So Swami Nikhilananda asked him, he was present when this incident took place at Belore Math. He asked him, "Oh, now you are completely all right. And what happened?" Now what I am going to tell is very important. This man, he told Swami Nikhilananda, "You know, probably you didn't understand the significance of Mahapurush Maharaj's words. I told him that I am deeply worried who is taking care of her. That's not the truth. The truth is, I couldn't live without her." You know, attraction, sexual attraction, if you want to be in grossest terms. I couldn't live without her. That's what made me mad. But Mahapurush Maharaj's words told me that I have to think of her lying in the lap of Sri Ramakrishna. And as I was thinking this, slowly my desire for her has become transformed. I am quite happy now. I don't know what happened to him, whether he might have got married or he might have become a spiritual aspirant. That's not the point. The point relevant for our talk today is, what was he telling to Mahapurush Maharaj? As though he is worried for her. Who is going to take care of her? But what was the real problem? Who is going to take care of me? How am I going to get rid of my desires? She was fulfilling my desires all this time. And now, how can I live without her? Was he worried about her? This is what Sri Ramakrishna is telling, you know. Husband is dying and the wife is weeping. Telling her, "What have you left for me? You are living dibbi chole jaachu. What have you left for me?" Is she worried about him? If we analyze our actions, we see there is a lot of, you know, what we talk, what we think is the truth, and what is the real truth. There is a big amount of gap is there. And any spiritual aspirant who is not aware of this is not going to anywhere. The first thing he should be aware of it is, yes, this is what is the reality. Unless we know where we want to go, and unless we know where we are, how are we going to go? Can we pretend we can cheat the whole universe? Can we cheat ourselves? It's not possible. That's why awareness is the first thing. Sri Ramakrishna is a personification of awareness. He could observe everything, understand in a minute what is the motive of the person, what his hajra was doing. Furiously, big beats he had, you know, rolling. Sri Ramakrishna said, "This rogue is thinking, how can I get 1,000 rupees? If you look at him, you think, "Wow, what devotion. He is, you know, only thinking about God." What was he thinking about? So Sri Ramakrishna became aware how people are leading their lives. Found out a mother whose only child died. She weeps for 15 days. After that, again she gets up, dresses herself, is ready for another child. A man who is ruined by court cases. Again he is going to court. And hardly had they even enjoyed their victory for a day or two, death overtakes them. That's what Yakshaprashna is telling. Yakshaprashna in Mahabharata. What is the most wonderful thing in this world? Not Taj Mahal, not the seven wonders of the world. What is the most wonderful thing? Every day, millions of creatures are going to the abode of death. But those who are alive never think that death is going to come to them any time. We all know death will come. But what we don't want to think is it's going to come next minute. That's why many times I told you, these people who died in Haiti, 1 minute before, were they thinking that death is going to come to us? This is our state. We just don't know next minute what is going to happen. When a person becomes aware of the goal, and life is intimately connected with this goal, that's where values come in. What is the first value? The man becomes acutely aware of time, passage of time. Ayuhu nashyati pashyatam pratidinam yatikshayam yavanam. You heard? What is stotra? Every day is gone. Time gone is gone. It's never going to come back. Everything is in this world is passing away. That's what made Buddha get transformation. That's what made Brother Lawrence transformed. Every saint is transformed only when this acute awareness that there is a goal and life is very precious. Life means time and opportunity. And if we don't use it, then we are going to lose something very precious. Death is going to overtake us. That's what transforms them. This is what is called conversion. So what is the point? All these stories have only this point. What was this point? That life is very precious. When does it become precious? Only when we have some goal. And that is where values come in. So as I mentioned, Sri Ramakrishna became acutely aware. Then his father passed away. Then he came to Calcutta. Then his eldest brother passed away. And that's what transformed Sri Ramakrishna. And said, I should not waste one single second again. By reading books, we cannot have values. They have to be acquired slowly. It will take time. That's what we are going to discuss now. Aware of value of time, and goal. Time and life becomes valuable only with a goal. That's where values come in. Values are what connects life with goal. Values are what connects us with the goal. If a person is without goal, then there are no meaning of values. First, let us dispose of one simple question. Can't we live without values? Categorical answer is no, for three reasons. Life is impossible without values. Even what is called ordinary life, worldly life, family life. There are different types of values. Family values, individual values, bodily values, then social values. What is life? Body, mind. So, body must be healthy. Body must be strong. That is a value. Why do we call it a value? Is it not a very natural thing for all of us to keep ourselves alive? We think, but the truth is otherwise. What is that? So many people suffer from diabetes, blood pressure, obesity. So take obesity. We are all, this is one of the special diseases of the developed nations. Obesity. Why? Because very little physical exercise and plenty of food is available. Is that the only reason? No. Lack of spirituality is the main reason for obesity. If God doesn't fill us, then fat fills us. So why are people suffering from obesity? Is it life? A fellow carrying so much of weight every day. I'm just joking, you know. I call you and put 20 kg on your head and say, every day, 24 hours until you die, you carry this weight. Would you agree? But what are you doing without my telling? Why do people go to gymnasium? That is the bodily value, health value. Health is one of the best, biggest values. And then comes family value. Where is family happiness if there is no harmony? To have harmony, they must have certain values in life. Harmony comes only when Some members of either a family or a society have certain common values. To take the simplest example, all the UK citizens, all of us, we agreed that this is how we will drive our cars. There would be red lights and we stop. There would be green light, then we start, is it not? If we don't have this value, what would be life? Chaotic. So that's family values. Then social values. There is certain way we all agree. If we want to be happy, then all of us, we have an individual life. There is nothing to do with anybody. But we have a social life. That is where we have certain rules, regulations. Even games have rules and regulations. Values of game, is it not? So, life without values will be valueless. Valueless means chaotic, unhappy, disharmonious. Then there would be no peace. Have you noticed? A state where there are no governors, means government is not there, and nobody is there to tell them what to do. You know what happens? At least some kind of value is necessary for certain amount of peace of mind. So life is impossible without them. Second, values are the very components of evolutionary process. What does it mean? I will come to that point. You see, you know, biological evolution is going up. This is every one of us accepts, right from the molecules, you know, until human birth, human life. Is that all evolutionary process? No. This is an animal life. What is it that makes the distinction between animal life and human life? Do you know what is it that makes a distinction? A life of values. This is the only distinction. Society becomes chaotic without values. Whether it is individual, family or society, without values, life becomes chaotic. So what makes life harmonious, that is what is called value. Again, we have to recapitulate what are values. So we defined value as that way of life which brings first harmony, second, it is an upward movement. If a value doesn't take us or make us evolve, then that is no value at all. Animals are also living without this kind of value. But for human beings, without this kind of upward movement, life is useless. Third, value must be rooted in reality. Let me tell you something funny. You know, there was a madcap. Every day morning, he would go behind a wine manufacturing building. You know, in India, they manufacture this wine and in pots, mud pots. So sometimes the wine is prepared, the pots become old or cracked, they are thrown in the backside. So this madcap used to go behind this factory with a stick, go on, break all the broken pots from sunrise to sunset, and in the evening exclaim, "Ah, I am not able to carry on any further. I am tired of this. How long am I going to go on doing this work?" That's why he's called mad. Why? Who asked him to go and do that? But he thinks that he's doing great service to the society. That is why he is called mad. Why is he called mad? What is madness? What is insanity? Not living in reality is insanity. You know, Sri Ramakrishna has unique definitions. What is sanity and what is insanity? It doesn't accord with psychologists. According to psychologists, if we don't behave like other madcaps, then we are mad. This is what Jung had defined. Most of the neurotic, so-called neurotic people, means people who are labeled as neurotic by people who think they are non-neurotic. That's what the definition of neurotic people. Jung used to say, often they are the sanest people. They are sane because they refuse to follow the dictates of the society, the treadmill which is followed by society. They want to take new type of steps. From the Sri Ramakrishna's viewpoint, it is a totally different definition. Once somebody went and called him, "You are mad." And he told, "Yes, my son, we are all mad." There is nobody who is sane. You are mad after name and fame, money, sense enjoyments. I am mad after God. I think my madness is far superior to your madness. You know why? This is what Swami Vivekananda told to Robert Ingersoll when he met him in America. They had a short conversation. And Robert Ingersoll, you know, he was agnostic. So he told, what is your philosophy? He was asked. He said, my philosophy is to squeeze the orange called this world and drink as much juice as is possible. Swami Vivekananda said, that's what exactly is my philosophy also. But with this difference, you could squeeze this orange only once. But I could squeeze it any number of times. What is he talking about? If I look at you as a human being, I can only squeeze happiness once. But if I look at you as God, every second I can squeeze the highest happiness. But of course, I don't know whether Robert Ingersoll really understood what Swamiji meant. But what is important for us is that from the viewpoint of Robert Ingersoll, the fellow who behaves in a different way, other than what he behaves, is not a very wise person. Whereas from the Swami Vivekananda's point of view, everybody is mad because we are living in unreality. What is Maya? Unreality. We just don't know how much potentiality lies within us. We just don't know how much happiness we have right now and here, but we don't know how to access. That is what Vedanta tells us. It is not telling anything new. It tells us all that you want happiness. You are happiness. You have infinite happiness. Why are you running here and there? This is what is called God. Infinite happiness, infinite life, that is called God. That is what Sri Ramakrishna, everybody complained, all the priests complained to Madhur Babu. Sri Ramakrishna was mad. Whereas Madhur Babu came and saw, he was in an ecstatic state, Godward state. The point, what is the point we are discussing? If we have to call something as value, that value must fulfill three conditions. What was the first condition? It must bring about harmony in life. That is called yoga. Yogaha samatvam. Wonderful talk. I cannot go on explaining everything, what I have talked and explained in the previous classes. You have to remember it. Second, it should be an upward movement. And third, it must be rooted in reality. And what is the reality? According to the definition of Vedanta, there is only one reality. And what is that reality? God, or Self, Atman, Brahman. This is the simple truth. That is what is a value. A value is that orientation of the mind which brings harmony, fulfillment, and takes us gradually, this is important, takes us gradually towards the manifestation of reality. Values are deeply held beliefs about what is good, right, appropriate. Values are deep-seated and remain constant over time. This is again very important. You cannot go on changing. Yesterday I had a different value. Today I have a different value. You can't change values. Values do not change. They are values because they are separate from us. We have to be aligned with them. They won't align with us with our changing opinions. That they are constant, they are universal, they are eternal. Values lead us beyond the world of facts and point to goals beyond the senses. Always a value is something which is beyond our sensory capacity. Values do not consist in what is desired, but rather what is desirable. That is, what we not only want, but feel that it is right and proper to want for ourselves and for others. It is this sense of ought that distinguishes values from ordinary desires or needs. Interestingly, both East and West have developed certain concept of values. And if we have to summarize the values cherished by the West, we have to say them, there are three values. Do you know that? Truth, goodness, and beauty. This was developed by Greek philosophers. Truth, goodness, and beauty. Interestingly, Indians have also developed or completely, it is the same. I will tell you the difference also very shortly, but equivalent to them, as though it is translated into Sanskrit language. You know what they are? Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram. But in the West, philosophy at some point became separated from practice, spiritual practice or moral practice. It became speculative, became intellectual. Therefore, these three values have been disconnected from reality. Only certain religions practiced them, but more or less philosophically are in the what is we call common ethos, the spirit of the common people like us. It has been completely, almost disassociated. But it has done a great service. The quest for truth had developed in tremendous explosion of discovering scientific and technological truths. The exploration into goodness has manifested in the form of tremendous social service, which you don't see in Eastern countries, especially in India. You know, the sense of social service. That's why Swami Vivekananda had specially introduced this concept in the 19th century. And the what we call the beauty, the value of beauty, has exploded into myriad forms of extraordinarily great art. You see, science, social service, and art. These are the direct results of the values pursued by the West of truth and goodness and beauty. Look at the East. East means, by East I mean Vedanta, especially India, especially Vedanta. By look at what Vedanta has done. It has connected Satyam, Shivam, and Sundaram with reality. Reality means here, God. See what happened? Satyam has taken the form of Jnana Yoga, the path of knowledge. And Shivam has taken path of, Shiva means goodness, Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga, Ishta and Purta. Sundaram means beauty. It has taken the form of Bhakti Yoga. My beloved, Radha and Krishna. You see? So why this variation? My thought was that this variation because of certain reasons. God has His own plans. He divided the whole world into two. And He said, let the West pursue these values in this form. Let the East pursue these same values in a different form. Or you can also say, instead of Satyam, Shivam and Sundaram, Sat, Chit and Ananda. Or Chit, Sat and Ananda. That is how yogas have developed in the East. So values are intangible abstract concepts which have their ultimate source in aspects of reality. Values have no existence, should not have any existence apart from the reality they represent. Otherwise, life becomes separate from reality. Just very, very short, very quickly, I will say why it is so. We already discussed, values are valueless unless they are rooted in reality. So if the values are not rooted in reality, any amount of quest for science and technology, any amount of explosion of what you call social service, any amount of explosion of art in myriad forms, they all point out to only one thing. You know what it is? Maya. If you are not rooted in reality, then you are rooted where? In the unreality. Any amount of unreality doesn't mount to reality. Any amount of zeros do not mount to any value. You put one, everything changes. That's what Sri Ramakrishna had come to teach, especially two things. One, to direct our attention from this reality to that reality. That is the first. Second, Sri Ramakrishna had come into this world to make a new type of person. Nutan Manush. Esheche Nutan Manush Degvijyati Aichal. If you want to see a new person, come and look. He is Sri Ramakrishna. What is that new person? Doesn't grow two horns. What happens? He is the combination of the East and the West. He has the best of the East. He has also the best of the West. This is what Swami Vivekananda's message. He said, I have come to the West because I have something to learn from there. And you come to the East because you have something to learn. Can we not live without learning from each other? You can live, but it won't be complete. If you want to be a full personality, there is only one value. And what is that? Combine both this world and also God, and means orient, divinize this very world. Don't make them separate, make them, cut them into two and say, some people, let some people be devoted to this world, let some people be devoted to God. That is not a very practical solution. A perfect harmonious combination of both this worldly values, truth, beauty and goodness, as well as sat yogas, four yogas. This is what Swami Vivekananda, that's why he was called universal man, Vishwa Manava. That's what we are going to discuss. The point I raised earlier, values as expressions of evolutionary urge. You know what is evolution? Darwin's theory of evolution. What is it? Every creature is evolving in both the body and also brain. Complexity. Brain is becoming more complex. The body is becoming more adept. That is how evolution takes place. One species mutates into another species. What is the cause? What is it that drives? What is the force that makes for evolution? No physicist was ever able to give a satisfactory answer. He says it is the urge to live. Anyway, you are living. What is the best point? You get another body and you live. Is that all? Vedanta has the answer. What is that? In each one of us, there is a teleological urge. Teleological urge means the urge to express our true inner reality. And what is our inner reality? Each soul is potentially divine. It is this urge to manifest divinity more and more that is the driving force behind evolution. For that, we need three types of evolutions: biological, moral, and spiritual. So biological evolution, as far as we human beings are concerned, is complete. But there are billions of other creatures who have yet to evolve and become human beings. But having become human beings, all of us have not become really human beings in practice. It is only in appearance. So the next two evolutions would be moral and spiritual evolution. And moral evolution is impossible without spiritual value. Because why the Swami Vivekananda had raised this question, why should I be good? If I can be happy without doing any good to you, why should I do good to you? No physical answer will give you, no science will give you the answer, no psychology can give you the answer. In fact, some of the psychologists are so blatantly ignorant. According to Freud, the deep unconscious is filled with only one force. You know what is it? Says it is full of sexual desire. That is complete foolish answer. What is the real answer? Swami Vivekananda said, within each one of us deeply, the divinity is urging us to manifest. This desire for manifesting our divinity may at first filter through the body and mind values. You know, body seeks physical sensory experience. The mind seeks certain intellectual values. But sooner or later we find that's not really fulfilling. This is what Jung had found out. When he became old, he became very, very intelligent in spiritual sense. So he wrote, "A Modern Man in Search of a Soul." And in his writing, many people had lot of problems. They used to come to me. I'm not quoting his words. I'm telling the sense of what he said. And I could not help them because I have no way to help them, but I became very curious how they solved their problems. And many years later I met them and found out most of them were completely cured of their problems. So I was surprised. I couldn't help being a psychologist, but they themselves solved the problem. Then I asked them, how did you solve these problems? Then invariably there is only one answer. You know what was that answer? All of them said that the problems had never been solved. But by looking at the problems from a higher standpoint, what was at one time a problem did not appear to be a problem at all. What a marvelous insight. So what was that higher view from which an ordinary problem is completely dissolved? It is not solved, it is dissolved. Buddha had not come to solve life's problems. He has come to dissolve the problem. How do you dissolve the problem? There was a funny incident. You know, I think it was Victor Hugo, perhaps. He had lot of enemies because he was very famous. Very curious, you know, human psychology, very curious. There was a school where journalists went to find out and asked the girls there, who is the most unpopular girl in your school? They pointed out, this is the most unpopular girl in our whole school. The journalist asked, why is she so unpopular? Because she won the most popular girl contest. After that, she became most unpopular. So, he had many enemies because he was very, very popular. So, somebody urged him. Once it so happened, most of his important enemies were gathered in a room and he had the capacity to finish them, all of them. So, his friends urged him, this is the right time, go and finish them. So, he went and after some time, he came out smiling. I finished all my enemies. Then his friends went and saw, all of them were there and smiling. So, they asked him, how did you finish them off? He said, I made them friends. That is what Vedanta has to tell us. That is what Jung had discovered. By developing a spiritual attitude, even the most difficult life's problem is not solved, but it is dissolved. It is not a problem at all. In fact, sometimes these things are looked upon as gifts from God. You know, Tulasidasa had a wife. He loved his wife very much. This is again a misnomer. He didn't love his wife. He loved himself more. His wife fulfilled his desires. So he could not live without her. So one day she had to go to her father's house. You know the story. And he ran after her. Then she became disgusted and she told him, if you had 100th of this love which you show towards me, towards Rama, your life would have been blessed. At that moment, the conversion had taken place. So how did he solve his problem for his wife? By lifting up his mind to a higher level, he could not have lived without his wife. Now he could live with anybody. That's why his wife became his first guru. Otherwise, ordinary people would say, what? You refuse my request? Then I divorce you. Yeah, this is what ordinary people are doing all the time. But what did Tulasidas do? You are a greatest blessing in my life because you brought me to God. So, values are those things which help us to evolve further. Within each man, there is an intrinsic urge to seek higher levels of existence, higher levels of consciousness, and higher levels of happiness. Values are manifestations of this urge. So, we said values are very important for life. We also said values are the very manifestations of this inner urge for evolution. And we also said values must be rooted in reality. Now comes a very important link. What is that which connects values or which connects us through values to reality? What is it that connects us to reality or to God through values? That there is a special word that is called yoga. When Hindus or Vedanta use the word yoga, don't always think only, you know, certain gestures and postures and pranayama. It is the only link. Yoga is what links, what is linkable. That's a very important concept. If we are not divine, we can never be linked with God. So what does yoga do really? Yoga's function is negative. That's why Patanjali himself has said, yoga is viyoga. Viyoga means what? Separation. What is the separation? We seem to be separated from God. What is it that makes us forget God or seem to be separating us from God? that is called Maya. We are now united with Maya. Now what does yoga do? It will separate us from Maya. What is the result? We are always connected with God only, but we have forgotten. That forgetfulness is removed. That forgetfulness, or we call it memory. What is memory? Memory means forgetfulness. Memory means forgetfulness. What am I talking about? Memory means what we say. Who are you? I am Swami. I am so and so. This is the CV we give. But what are we really? We have forgotten our real identity. Arjuna had forgotten his real identity. That's why he was behaving in a peculiar way. That's why he was so unhappy. But Krishna was there, fortunately. He gave the whole teaching, yoga. He gave him yoga. What did yoga do? Yoga removed his false memory, and that's all need. That's why in the end he was asked, did you listen to my teaching with one-pointedness? Kaschidetat shrutam partha tvayikagrena chetasa. If you had listened, there would be only one result. What is that result? Your moha, means delusion, would disappear. You see, delusion is means identity or memory. It is also memory. If you have no memory, you will have no delusion. You have no reality, you will have no delusion. No memory, nothing. No problem. Yeah, there was a fellow, he used to think he was a worm. So he went to a psychiatrist. 2 years he was treated, and the psychiatrist convinced him that he was not a worm, but he was a normal human being. So last session, he paid his fees, and he was chit-chatting with the psychiatrist, and suddenly he saw a chicken was coming, crossing the road. Immediately he jumped onto the shoulders of the psychiatrist. Doctor, doctor, that chicken is coming to eat me up. Psychiatrist said, man, did I not convince you that you are not a worm, but you are a man? Doctor, yes, I understand, doctor, but the chicken doesn't understand. So, Arjuna categorically replied, Nashto mohaha, my delusion is destroyed. What did he say? Come on, Gita students. Smritir labdha, memory has been regained. Did he not have memory before? But what was that memory? It was a delusion. I am a worm. But now he knew, I am not Arjuna. Who am I? I am divine. That is the real memory. So when we are calling ordinary memory, what is it? It is called forgetfulness. The more memory we have, the more forgetful we are about our own. That is why yoga chitta vritti nirodha. Most wonderful word. Chitta vritti. Chitta. The word chitta. The English word mind doesn't convey the meaning. In Sanskrit, the word manas. You see? Mano buddhi ahankara chittani naham. Manas, buddhi, ahankara and chitta. Mind is divided into 4 components. One of the most important components is called chitta. What is the function of the chitta? Memories are stored in chitta. But these are all false memories, not real memory. Therefore, what is yoga? Vritti nirodha. You remove false memories. The real memory is covered with false memories. Remove these false memories. Then what remains? What comes out? Real memory. That is called yoga. Yoga means viyoga in that sense. It doesn't give us anything new. It doesn't join us with anything. It simply joins, makes us remind, you are not ordinary human being. You are divinity itself. That's all. That is the function of yoga. What do the values do? Values are those which are urging us from our side, you will have to do something to manifest your divinity. They are connected with reality. But what is it that links us with reality? Yoga. Just now I said. How does it do it? By its function is negative. What is the negativity? It removes all the false things. So values, what do? Through the practice of yoga, these values, what they remove everything that stands between us and our true self. That's why as I mentioned, Eastern value, Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram, Chit, Sat and Ananda. These are the equivalents, but they have been connected with reality. That is the speciality of Vedanta. Without spirituality, this life is completely zero. Now, that is where Indian concept of values come to our rescue. Indian philosophy is primarily a philosophy of values. It has adopted, right from very ancient times, a two-tier system of values, which are known as purusharthas. When we use the English word values, the equivalent of it in Sanskrit, what is it? Purushartha. The lower tier consists of three values, kama, artha, dharma. Hindu scriptures clearly state that kama and artha should be governed by dharma. Two tiers of values. Really speaking, there is only one value. Truly speaking, there is only one value. But for the sake of convenience and practice, from the Indian point of view, values have been divided into two categories. Instrumental value and intrinsic value. That value which serves the purpose of something else. Instrument means, you know, an instrument never works for itself. It is always for the sake of somebody else, a conscious being. So dharma and artha and kama, or I would say artha, economic value. Kama is fulfillment value. When it is guided and acquired and enjoyed with the light of dharma, they become instrumental values. Instrumental values are only instrumental values. From that point of view, there is only one value, which is intrinsic value. What is that? Self-knowledge, liberation, moksha. Dharma, artha, kama are instrumental values, and moksha is the ultimate value. With this introduction, I will summarize this. In Indian concepts of values are especially spiritual values. There is only one value. The word values are meaningless. There is only one value, spiritual value. What is that? Discover, find out your own true nature. Manifest your divinity, whatever language you want to use it. But in order to attain it, there must be instrumental values. What are those? Dharma, artha and kama. And as I mentioned, values must be rooted in reality. And what connects values to reality is yoga. Therefore, yoga has only, by allowing us to slowly develop instrumental values, and ultimately through those instrumental values, we reach the intrinsic value, which is spiritual fulfillment, discovering our own true nature. That is the ultimate goal of life. This is where certain values, spiritual values, come to our aid. And how marvelously this has been again and again reiterated in our scriptures, right from the Vedic times until Sri Ramakrishna's teachings. This is what I would like to discuss in my future classes by quoting. I had already quoted two Vedic prayers, but I will come immediately in my next class to that, and how it relates to what we had discussed today. How our body, our mind and our soul. That's why there are three instrumental values, one intrinsic value. We have two instruments. What are those instruments? Body and mind. Our ultimate goal is to discover what our true nature is. And whether we are looking at worldly life or whether we are looking at spiritual life, values through yoga is the only thing which will bring fulfillment both in this life and also in the discovery of our own true nature. So, Vedanta is never opposed to worldly life. I mentioned it many times to you. After reading Shankara, especially, I think this world is unreal. It is a delusion. It is a cesspit. You have to completely forget about it. This is nonsense. Our Vedas have never taught that. What they said, it is a joyful journey from a lower happiness to a gradually higher happiness. This is what biological evolution is all about. That small bit of one-celled insect or life is slowly evolving in Sat, in Chit and in Ananda. It is never said, oh, this poor creature has to be reborn so many times. What a waste of life. No, this journey from a lower state of happiness to a higher state of happiness is what is termed as evolution from Vedantic spiritual viewpoint. But our main discussion would be, what are those values who are aspiring for spiritual progress? Because even though we have discussed it in general many times, in particular, specifically, I never discussed these things. But I would like to discuss in my future classes. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.